So you can kind of understand why your parents would be like, no, you can't do this, you can't earn a living from this. Because during that time, they had to, you know, work for, how do I call it? Like, work for what is necessary to survive.
Yes.
Yeah, but because of their hard work in the past, mm-hmm. it has given us the privilege and opportunity to explore what we actually want.
That's like, true.
They gave us like a home, you know, the food and, I don't know, just the ability to explore our options.
Yeah, without thinking of where's the next meal coming from.
Yeah, that was something they didn't have in the past. Mm. So I think that is a reason why like content creation and YouTube blew up in this era. Also, of course, like the digital age and stuff lah. But more so is because there's so much more opportunities now for youngsters, anyone with a phone.
Yes,
you can just create anything. Create anything you want, and that is, anything is content these days, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Talk Some More, the video podcast dedicated to featuring young creators, entrepreneurs, and ordinary people with extraordinary stories. This show is distributed on YouTube, Spotify, and iTunes, so feel free to follow us for the latest episodes. My guests today are Celine and Julian, the founders and creator of Mini Mochi, a light-hearted and fun comedy YouTube channel that has earned the loyalty of over 250,000 subscribers. In this episode, we talk about what it takes to make YouTube a business, the challenges and sacrifice that comes with it, as well as how each of them left a promising career to pursue the risky and uncharted path of being full-time creators and YouTubers. Ladies and gentlemen, Celine and Julian, let's talk some more. Thanks guys for coming on the show today. It's the first podcast of 2021.
Hurrah!
And congratulations on your new studio.
Thank you.
When do you guys move in?
Officially like the end of February.
February. Mm-hmm.
It was a very rushed period of just one day moving everything out of our house and into this place.
So you've moved everyone out, including the dog, yeah?
Oh yeah, she's making herself very comfortable.
Well, yeah, I mean, and also you guys have just passed 250,000 subscribers, right?
Oh yeah, we
just
did.
Only, yeah.
Just 250,000, I think a few days ago. So congratulations on that. I think you guys are one of the biggest, it should be the biggest like self-made, self-running channels in Singapore. Have you guys checked?
Really?
Really?
I don't know.
This is based
on my own just searching and stuff like that.
I think our Singapore audience is actually surprisingly small. So...
Is it?
Yeah, so like majority of our audience actually isn't Singaporean. It's like
US.
A mixture like US, Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia. Singapore is there like the top five, but it's not like the largest
majority.
Yeah, so maybe you would count like as a Singapore creator, you know? That's why we're not really that, how to say, well known in Singapore?
Well, most talked about in Singapore.
Yeah, most talked about
in
Singapore.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit surprising because most of your content is sort of catered towards the Singaporean audience, right?
Yeah, I know, right?
Like the whole Asian mom, the schools mm-hmm. and lessons you learn in life, things like that. Wow, that's interesting actually.
But it is growing lah. Because
growing
now we're like, now we're trying to grow more, we're trying to be more, touching more of our Singaporean roots, you know?
Okay.
So we do see like the Singapore audience growing.
That's
so
great. Yeah. And I mean, you guys are obviously, this is a big step for you in your company, right? To set up your own studio here, having an enormous space. I mean, what kind of triggered that move? I mean, firstly, it's a big move with a lot of things to think of, finance and moving and all
definitely.
These things. It comes with its benefits and disadvantages. So, yeah, what went through your mind when you moved here?
I think I can take this. In one word, desperation.
Oh, really?
We were forced to move.
You thought we had a choice?
Oh shit! Okay. I hit a nerve. I guess.
I mean, throughout our time together, we had a lot of assets and things we could use. But naturally, some things expire. Things will move on, and we were lucky enough to have a place previously. But that place had to go, and so we were forced to find a new place.
Ah, okay.
Basically, we were evicted.
But I mean, that's how some things progress, isn't it? When time is up, and then you have to move on to the next big thing, whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
But I guess it's a sort of external pressure and things like that. But
yeah, it's like you're forced to evolve, right?
Yeah.
You can't stay stagnant at the same phase forever.
Going back to the start, how did Mini Mochi start? Ooh. I understand that you guys started it as a
a way like how most YouTubers do it. You just want to make videos and put it on. But the whole brand of Minimochi and the sort of the direction of your videos, you know? Like, you guys do mostly comedy sketches and also some listicles and life, mostly from your own life, I guess. So how did that all evolve from starting a random YouTube video and then moving on to, you know, finding your niche?
Finding our niche?
We have a niche?
We have a niche.
Sort of. I mean, people know what to expect when they go to your channel.
Really? Until now, I don't even know what I'm expected
would you,
to put up.
Do you have a label for it then?
I don't, you know, when people ask me, so what do you, what content do you make? And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, how do I describe it? Well, I scream at potatoes. I sometimes sing. I sometimes fry an egg in the sun.
Oh, the egg thing. Yeah, I remember that very vividly.
So, I guess you could say I do lifestyle.
That is pretty much lifestyle. Mm. How many potatoes were hurt in the making of?
Oh, too many. You don't want to know.
So there's like Julian, like go out and buy like a sack of potatoes. Is one sack enough?
Most of the time it isn't.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Like, I think of the amount of potatoes that we've gone through, I can actually make like a whole sculpture. Maybe that should be our next video. Making a sculpture of the potatoes.
Yeah. Do you guys eat it in the end?
Yeah, most some of them we did.
Like, cook it first or just raw?
So we peel off the skin because you always draw like markings on the potatoes, right? Yeah. So we peel off the skin and then we cook it.
So french fries or just kantang.
I think really whatever we can. Yeah. Look at Sean's face.
I'm like really wondering. Oh, okay. So that's good. I mean, like, there's no waste in your props. Mm. But I mean, really, you don't know your niche. I think you know, you just don't have a word for it.
Well, some of my friends describe it as chaotic energy. Would you say that's a good term for
organized chaos? I think it's quite organized. Chaos? Yeah, I think with a team like yours, you have some kind of organization, right?
Well, that's what we like to pretend that we do lah.
You do lah. You do lah.
Okay, so but going back to your main question, because you want to know like how everything.
Yes. Yeah. How did
about,
the whole thing start?
So me and Julian, we've always been in the science route of things. Like growing up through JC, through secondary, we always did well in science, like biology, physics. So
she was the top in level for biology at some point.
Wow.
The whole of junior college, top.
Top.
Number one.
Yeah.
Just a year. Some waters.
I've never really thought about going into the arts. I mean, I do love art. Like, I've always liked doing it as a hobby and stuff. But the art stream, like history, theatre, all that kind of thing, mostly because, you know, Asian parents, they're just like, oh, you can't do well in arts. Like, how are you going to grade you for it? It's so objective.
Yeah,
like
they have a set mind on what things can be quantified.
Yeah, exactly.
Creativity can't really be quantified. Exactly. You know, it's a fluid thing.
Yeah, so they're like, just go for science. At least, like, you know, photosynthesis equals plus one.
Maybe answer. It's
exactly.
Right or wrong.
Everything is just black and white. So growing up, I was just like, fine, if I just did the best I could in school, like get all straight A's and stuff, I'm sure I would have the most options in life, right? Like, supposedly that was how
should
I
open
thought.
More doors, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, all the doors would be open for me if I did the best I could. Yeah. That was the mindset. And I think that's the thinking a lot of kids have
that's
now
true.
As well,
yep.
Right? And then it came to choosing my university degree, lah. And I was just like, hold up. So I've been doing science all my life. So it would make sense to go into something, to have a career in science.
Yep.
Right? It doesn't matter what I like. I can't do anything else now because I've never done arts. I've never done theater. So I did science.
Sort of a chosen route for you.
Yeah, so I went to pharmacy. Sorry to all pharmacy students out there, but come on, guys. It is tough. It is boring. There's no structure in like the naming of drugs and how they come about and stuff. Very, very tough course. Definitely need some sort of calling in order to do it.
A very strong passion in drugs.
Drug dealer.
Drug dealers.
Exactly. So I think like it hit me when I was sitting in the lecture theater. I was just like, is this what I'm going to do all my life? Like looking at paracetamol, esomethasone, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember Zyrtec, whatever. And I was just like, I don't want that.
Okay.
I just don't want that. I can't imagine staying in a pharmacy booth and someone just coming up to me asking, where's the toothpaste?
Oh, no.
I mean, that is what happens, right?
Okay.
Supposedly, that is one complaint.
I thought it would be more like research, like in the background, making medicine.
Well, that is the more glamorous side of things, okay. If you can actually make it there. So
that's what I choose to see, but
yeah,
it's a very eye-opening. Okay.
Yeah, so I remember going up to my parents and telling them, like, I really don't want this life. Mm-hmm. Like, can I take a gap year? Like, I don't want to do pharmacy. I need to figure out what I want.
Yep.
And my parents specifically said, you know, again, strict Asian household, they were just like, if you know that you can't escape from this, don't even think about it. Just accept it. And then you won't be depressed. You'll just move on and accept your fate.
I can see where they're coming from. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, so that made me feel very trapped. And I cried the whole night.
This was the same day in the lecture theatre?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, very quick, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a like build-up of things. La. There was like 1.5 years in pharmacy already. It wasn't like straight in pharmacy, then poof, I wanna get out. You know, okay. It was like a slow build-up of things. Afterwards, I just took the gap year anyway.
Yeah, I think it wasn't very common back then for people to take gap years, right? I think it's a lot more common now. I've only heard about it when I went to Australia. I was like, what's a gap year? You got so much time. Because guys, we have to go army, right? Like,
right.
Hey, no time really, like everything fast-paced. So how did that gap year kind of help you with your next move then?
So my thinking was, I have no experience in theatre, acting at all, production, even though I really like it. Mm-hmm. Like, I love theatre, I love acting. So my thinking was, in this 1 year, I just got to build up that skill set.
Yep.
Yeah, I went for classes, I went to do research, I went with like, you know, what is it called, masterclass, all that kind of thing. And YouTube just seemed like the perfect platform to practice those skills.
That's true.
Right? You know, like acting, production, script writing, editing,
that's
all
true.
That.
Because you kind of need a platform to put the results there. If not, it's just, you know, doing it on your own.
Theory is theory, but you still need action, right? So we put it in action and I just posted it onto YouTube lah. And surprisingly, people liked what I made. Like, I don't know why, but surprisingly, they liked what I made. It wasn't too long before we kind of had like our first viral video.
Was it the influencer one?
Actually, the first one was the Beauty and the Beast parody.
Beauty and the Beast. The parody. Okay. I'll get to that singing part in a bit later.
And then the one that really hit though was, of course, the Singapore influencer one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that one too.
That was the most recognized one that I can remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was when like my life kind of changed, like, because I was scouted by MediaCorp, and then things became more stable and certain in a sense. Like, it felt like, okay, I can actually do this. Rather than a hopeless feeling, it was just now, okay, there is hope. I can build something for myself.
Yeah, there's some form of, not validation. Is it called validation? Like a result kind of thing? Because like what you said, there's no certification, you didn't study it, but when people start to recognize your craft, it's sort of that like, yeah, I can do this, you know? There's somebody that's saying like, yes, you're good at this.
Yeah,
is that affirmation?
Affirmation, assurance.
Yeah, assurance, yeah.
Assurance.
So I think like, firstly, like it's really brave to move out of a, what we would Singapore would call a safe route, you know?
Yeah,
like all the doctors and engineers, lawyers, you know? Things that they have been tried and proven to be a successful career, you know. So, yeah, firstly, that's very brave. I understand, like, Julian as well, you also did... What happened to all the medical students? All medicine boring you all to death, right? Yeah, but... So, like what you said, we'll come back to Julian's story in a bit, but like what you said, you so from then on, you started making YouTube videos, and when did Julian come into the picture, or was he already there from the start?
Oh, he was always there from the start.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So this was kind of your baby that you've molded. Mm-hmm. But what is Mini Mochi? What's Mochi? It's the soft.
Oh.
Is that the dessert?
The name you're talking about.
Yeah, the name.
Mochi, it is the dessert.
It's the dessert, right?
A lot of people always say Mini Mochi.
Mochi.
But actually, it's Mini Mochi.
What did I say?
What
Mochi.
Did you say?
I think it's Mochi.
I said Mochi. Yeah.
It actually has no like relevance to the dessert at all. It just so happens that I just call myself. I need a name, you know, and I was just like,
it's a cute
Mini
name,
Mochi.
Right?
It sounds nice. Okay, I like it. I'll take it.
That's kind of the thing, right? Like once you get to that viral place, whatever sticks lah. Mm-hmm. So if you get something bad, like if you name yourself something else.
Oh,
like,
do you know what I wanted to call myself actually? I was gonna call myself Burp the Butt.
What?
Burp the butt. And Julian was really adamant against it.
I would have loved to see like MediaCorp like posters, you know, like at events. Oh, at burp the butt.
Yeah.
Burp the butt.
It's bop the butt, but I just want to pronounce it as burp the butt.
I thought like butt burps are like farts.
Oh my gosh.
That's what I thought it meant.
That could mean something, huh?
Yeah, and Julian was like, do you really want to be associated with a butt?
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, then... At that time, at the time of you know, while you're molding this, yeah, like you said, you didn't know why your audience liked this kind of videos. Mm-hmm. But was there a target audience for you, or is there a target audience now? I mean,
there wasn't a target audience. I think the target audience was always just Singaporean audience, like
relate.
Chinese, Asian audience. But it kind of attracted a certain group of audience, right? That was like the younger preteens, I would say, like 12, 11, that sort of age, that around that age group. Is it because I just give off that vibe? I'm a kid inside?
It's a fun innocence in a way.
Yeah. I think the speed of the pace of the videos, it's something that the younger audiences can relate to. I mean, like for me, my audiences are like above 25 to 40 because I talk about like filmmaking equipment that only at that financial stage of your life you can afford.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And also the pace of my videos are a bit different, not as energetic. So, you know, the younger audience will be like, nah, it's not enough.
Ours is very fast. It's just bump.
And I mean, how do you guys find the energy to do that? Like,
oh, we drink like Red Bull every day. You should check our fridge.
Oh my gosh, is that a Red Bull fridge? Like, oh my gosh. Like, yeah, I mean, every text that Julian replies to me is with an exclamation mark.
Oh yeah.
Right? I was like, why is this guy shouting at me? It's like, okay. Like, I'm reaching, okay. Like, mine has like no emoji. Like, just like, Julian, turn right or left. Right?
Oh really? Yeah.
I'll show you. It's like all exclamation marks. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, it was like very brave of you. Same for you, coming from a medical route and then choosing to, I wouldn't say abandon, but to take a different path. I think both of you guys have already made like very heartfelt videos about this topic, but you guys did it in a very cute way, right? Mm-hmm. Not a sad crying way. You know, if you guys, my camera, if you guys want to check it out, you guys can go to your channels. But maybe just sum it up for us, for those of them who don't know the story. How this timeline, who realized what first?
Mm. Oh, I was always the one who knew that I wanted to be in media.
Yeah,
Julian was always the, I want to be a doctor.
Oh, I want to be a doctor.
Wow, really?
So
okay.
He was the altruistic, I must help the world in true medicine alone and not nothing else, just medicine alone. Yeah, even though there are so many other ways you could help people, but no, medicine.
Laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah. Hey,
wow.
Have you guys used that line? I'm pretty sure it's in one of your videos.
Probably not. But yeah. I do say that humor is my armor.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. So, cool. Yeah, it was always me who wanted to be in media. In fact, Julian hated the idea.
Kind of at first.
For a very long time, he didn't want to do YouTube. Mm. He was like, oh, find somebody else. Oh. I don't want to do it.
Why? Okay. May I ask why?
So, when I was in my first year of medical school, as the person who wanted to be a doctor so much, filming took a long time. Each video would take maybe between 1 to 3 to 1 week to film. Non-stop. And so, yeah, it was opportunity cost from studying medicine. So I could start to see myself getting worse and worse in my knowledge and damn it. Was hard, yeah.
I mean, it's not like a one-day thing for videos, right? We all know that it takes a couple of days, you know, reshoots if you must. So, yeah, definitely understand the crunch of a professional line. Like, yeah, myself, I study architecture, so I know, like, in the professional line, especially, it's so delicate, you can go off track so easily. So in that sense, what made you sort of commit to this? Because like I said, it's a bold and brave move, but there had to be something that kind of triggered it, right?
I guess it was love.
Love for media.
an eventual love for media.
Love for me.
Yeah. fishing for that quote so you can clip it. Would you ever consider, at the point of time, did you see, or should I ask more of the future of of the channel. A bit speeding through my topics, but what do you see the future for the channel or the production company is? Do you guys, besides building your own content, do you see yourself doing outside content like production, or would you rather keep it your own personal thing?
I think for me, I see it more as a personal thing.
Mm-hmm. I think for myself, I see it more as a slow growth to something much bigger. Mm. Yeah.
We don't really have an exact concrete plan of what
of course,
things,
yeah.
things are going to look like in the future. But if you're asking like whether we're going to go into like filmmaking, short films, all that sort of thing, I wouldn't deny that possibility. But as of right now, I kind of prefer keeping things like me and my community kind of like personal. Yeah. You know, because once you go into those are more like, I would say it's more commercial-ish. Mm-hmm.
More like, public, not public. Yeah, like
how do I say it? It's not as personal.
It's external, more external influences. Like, what would you call it? Okay, I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, I don't know. That's but how I can only describe it.
External forces that might sort of impact the way you do things, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So keeping it personal feels more close to the community I'm with right now and the community I've built. So it's something I want to work. Of course, I'll grow, and I believe my community will grow with me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it'll grow like with me as well as grow bigger. Lah.
Yep.
All
right, so the next question I kind of want to ask is this whole business of yours, right? Growing this business, it's sort of an uncharted territory.
Mm.
Especially now, now it's not because we have you guys, right? If anyone wants to kind of do, we have like, you know, NOC, you guys, we have smaller channels and bigger channels. But YouTube kind of grew in our era. Mm. So like as Singaporeans, you know, content creators wasn't really a thing in the early 2000s, the 90s or the early 2000s. So how was it like sort of charting this path when nobody has ever done it before? Like there wasn't any lessons, not like, you know, pharmacy, you study this, you get this. You get this pay, you have job security, you can last maybe until you're 60, 70 and retire. So how was it like? What's the experience?
To be a trailblazer?
Yes, that's the word. That's the word.
Scary? Of course it is scary if it's uncertain. But you feel so proud to have something you can call your own.
Yes.
Yeah, like all the content you make, this is purely your own. And going back to the point of how, you know, this grew in our era,
mm-hmm.
Changed a lot, huh, in the past 30, 50 years. So you can kind of understand why your parents would be like, no, you can't do this, you can't earn a living from this.
Yeah.
Because during that time, they had to, you know, work for, how do I call it? Like, work for what is necessary to survive.
Yes.
Yeah, but because of their hard work in the past, mm-hmm. it has given us the privilege and opportunity to explore what we actually want.
That's
like
true.
They gave us like a home, you know, the food and I don't know, just the ability to explore our options.
Yeah, without thinking of where's the next meal coming from.
Yeah, that was something they didn't have in the past.
Mm.
So I think that is a reason why like content creation and YouTube blew up in this era. Also, of course, like the digital age and stuff lah. But more so is because there's so much more opportunities now for youngsters, anyone with a phone.
Yes,
you can just create anything you want, and that is, I mean, anything is content these days, right?
Mm-hmm. But that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you don't need like massive studios or big equipment to do anything.
Exactly,
now.
Like the barriers of entry now have fallen to just a phone.
Which is kind of great, isn't it? Like people can focus more on what they're making instead of, you know, having these barriers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having, you know, you need to study film, you need to go to acting school or anything.
Yeah, you got to like create, like, you got to win some short film award
in order to
be a good director.
Like go for so many castings or something like that. But now it's like, you know, we find so many hidden talents out there. But I mean, coming back to sort of the business, like trailblazing this, I mean, it has to put on quite a bit of stress personally because you guys are on camera as well as behind doing the business as well. So how has it been to, I mean, how do you guys manage this stress, both good at the good and the bad of the business, you know?
You can take it.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
Julian.
We work quite closely as a team. Celine does the creative side and I do the strategic organizational production side.
Yeah.
So I guess I realized as I was going through medicine, that entrepreneurship is a huge interest of mine as well.
Okay.
And I love it. It's just the freedom of it. In a very macro perspective, when life started out in Singapore, there were many small businesses. Mm-hmm. Small businesses grew to big businesses and people therefore worked for the big businesses. But at some point, the big businesses need to change, but they can't change because they're too bureaucratic. So that's where small businesses start popping up again. It's like a cycle.
Okay.
And that's what I was taught in
I kind of get it. Yeah. I'm struggling, but I kind of get it.
Yeah. I follow a few foundational rules, I guess, with respect to building a business. The first is you do touch your heart and ask yourself, do I really believe in this? And you have to discern your own truth. So I felt that media had huge potential and I truly, truly believed in it. Mm. In a very simple sense, every day counted and we were going towards the future, there was something bigger. Another concept is, I guess, that of pivoting. Be very clear of whether or not something is working or not. You have the flexibility to change your mind.
Yeah.
Many times.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I am more likely to hit the final outcome because I can change my mind rather than if I had to aim really far and snipe a target very far away.
So it's not a one-hit wonder kind of thing. It's more of a multiple shots.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you kind of have to be pretty decisive in this line.
I guess
to know when to change directions or when to stay the course.
Mm, true, yeah. So kind of like driving, when you press the pedal and move, make some mistakes sometimes, people honk at you, but you're generally okay as long as you don't make too big a mistake. So to recap again the question, Celine does the creative, I do the organizational, and based off the experiences I had in the past, I realized that many paths in life are all parallels. So even though I studied medicine and I did a lot of leadership stuff, those could easily be translated over
to
entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer that, like what you said, academics, anything you study or anything in life should open more doors instead of close it. You know, even if you study to become a doctor, it should open more doors for you rather than, you know, a single door for you to go through. And I think that's a lot of things that our generation kind of struggled with, and now it's a bit better. More people are, you know, studying something that they thought was right, but finding that one moment where they want to change and taking that leap. So I think people, like what you said, firstly, we have the opportunity because of the previous generations, they've afforded us this opportunity to be creative and to, you know, try different routes, you know. But then it also takes a lot of personal courage, like what I said from you guys. It's because I come from, like I said, an architectural background, and I have thought of what if I did something else? What if I did this film thing for a living? And it scares the shit out of me. Like, that's why I have so much admiration for people who actually take the plunge and did this career against the majority of odds. More of the opinions of the majority saying, like, you know, are you sure YouTube is a career kind of thing? But I think you guys have kind of proven that that it can be a viable, industry, job, career path, passion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with that whole driving car thing and people horning you, I'm not going to ask what you guys do with haters or anything like that. I'm more interested in how you guys, channel both the good and the bad of the public, I would say. Because it's probably an emotional roller coaster. I mean, I get one bad comment and I feel kind of shitty already, but you guys have 250,000 people watching you. So how does that internalize, or how do you guys process that into, you know, making it better or making, you know, time to take a different direction or something like that? Sorry, a very deep question.
No, it's more of, I think I've been very fortunate in the sense that I don't think I've ever gotten a really malicious hate comment. So hate comments, yes, but, you know, hate comments usually come from people who have a certain perception already. For example, Blackpink, you know, like, I want my Blackpink idols to look like this and sing a certain way. Yep. So why are you, like, making fun of them by, like, not looking like them and not singing like them, you know? Why aren't you Blackpink? Exactly.
You,
yeah. So those are people who already kind of have a mindset. They don't hate you. They just hate that it doesn't fit their idea of what they wanted. Okay. So you don't take it personally. Mm. You know, it's just like, it's not personal, basically.
Yep.
And that is something that I think a lot of YouTubers have to, as in, they don't have to, but a lot of users tend to use that mindset, lah, which is, don't take it personally. It's not really about you.
Yep.
Yeah, it's more of, they have something, they have like an idea. And also, haters gotta hate, right?
That's true.
The haters gotta hate. Sometimes the they just hate go for somewhere. No reason. Like yeah, there's literally no reason. They just so want a target to hate, and that target happens usually to be a public figure, because public figures look like they have everything, you know, they have
money, they have it better they in have life. Everything.
So like okay lah, I need to channel my hate somewhere. I channel to someone who probably won't notice my hate comment anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Usually hate comments, I think the ones that really affect you the most is when it comes from somebody in your life.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like yes. your friend or
because
your
you care
relative.
About what they think.
Yeah, exactly. So someone, a stranger on the internet, is not personal. Haters gotta hate. But then when it's someone close to you, like your friend from secondary school, it's like, hey, what are you doing? Why I disagree with your opinion. You shouldn't say that kind of thing. I'm like, okay.
Ouch.
Yeah, like, yeah. And
stings a bit more.
Yeah, it does, right? Because these are people that you kind of grew up with, and then they have this idea of you now, and you hear it from them personally, and you take it personally this time.
That's
because
true.
Because they're
personal
now. Now it's personal.
There's a relationship there, yeah.
How do I get over it? Everyone has different opinions, I guess. It's apples and oranges. Some people don't agree with what you do, and some people are never going to accept that you do what you do.
That's true.
Yeah, and you just got to move forward. Lo.
I think it's easier said than done. Like, personally, I would, you know, proudly say, like, just say out loud that it doesn't affect me.
Mm.
But I think you guys have done this a lot longer and sort of molded your mind a bit more to
like, we numb ourselves already.
Somewhat
like
build up
armor and
sort of the maturity of it, I would say. The maturity of these external forces that's coming in.
How do you deal with hate comments, Julian?
So our fan base is called Moochies, for the second half of your name. And, well, we are very lucky because they are the sweetest.
Yeah, they're actually very nice. Very like, I barely get hate comments.
Correct.
And if I do, it's never personal. Like, I don't like you because of you. It's because I don't like the idea. Like,
okay. Yeah. Just the video didn't fit them that well.
Mm-hmm. So many times I see people maybe saying something that could be taken the wrong way,
mm-hmm.
and then they apologize, and then it suddenly becomes like a wholesome comment section. That like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't mean that. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
I mean, because words can be twisted so easily, especially like without any tone or anything like that.
Mm.
This is a question for both the production side and the creative side. Maybe you guys can give both your feedback. What's one of the most, I would say, firstly, the most difficult project you've undertaken? And yeah.
I feel like saying the Beauty and the Beast video was the hardest for me.
Oh, one of the very early stages
ones? Yes, correct.
Why?
It took about 4 to 5 days to film it. Audio quality was really bad, so we had to take the same scene many times.
Oh, okay.
One of the nights, I decided to go for a half a marathon run.
Ooh.
The next morning, I was like, Celine, I'm a bit tired. And Celine's like, what? And I was like, oh shit, I gotta continue. And we were using a glide cam then.
Yeah.
I was not familiar with the glide cam, so I made a lot of mistakes with it. I think we took 35 to 50 takes to do the same motion over and over with my legs half bent. Yeah.
Oh no, that's after the half marathon.
Yes.
Oh no.
So the early stages were really, really, really difficult, at least for me. Yeah,
I mean, that's the technicalities of it, right?
Mm.
I mean, like, glide cam for anyone is difficult, but half marathon is a bit crazy. I've only done it once in my life. I'm like, I don't want to ever feel that pain again.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, creatively?
No, going back to the Beauty and the Beast video, right? Now that I think about it, I remember, because at the time, we didn't really know how to use audio softwares and stuff. Because we make a lot of parodies now, right?
Yeah.
We have to sing, we have to edit the vocals and all that. And at the time, we didn't know how. In fact, what did we use? We used Audacity.
Yeah,
do you know Audacity?
Yes, I mean, Audacity is a free software, right?
Yeah, we used Audacity to try to create a studio recording.
Oh my gosh. It's so awesome. That means like what layering and everything on top? Do you all do?
So we didn't know anything.
Yeah,
so
we didn't know anything.
We used a shotgun mic and just press record, then sing the same thing over and over and over again. So you got one stretch for recording, and then you cut and splice it together.
Oh.
Really difficult.
So you say the same verse over and over again.
Kind of.
Yeah, and of course, we weren't really good at singing then. So it was like, we were not very good now also, but we were even worse then. You know, we were even worse then.
So you guys
then,
are professionals now.
We were even worse then. All right, and when it came to having to adjust the pitch, I would go to like Final Cut Pro, okay, a video editing software, and I tried to like push up the pitch, and I have no music background or anything, so I was just like I remember sitting in the room and I was just like, wow, this is terrible. I'm going to cry right now. And I just cried, like, tears coming out. Just like, I can't do this, Julian. Help
dripping
me.
On you the keyboard.
Yeah, like, you know, music, right? You just help me. And he's like, oh, this is so bad. And I think we in the end, we just scrapped it and just redid the entire thing one more time.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think the whole video took like 3 weeks, actually. Yeah. It could have been easily done in a week or a few days, but the whole process of learning a new skill.
And that's the thing about creators like us. Like, we don't have a background in it. I never learned video editing. It was all picked up along the way. And it's like what you say, if you don't put it out there, you will never sort of improve yourself. It's always like, yeah, it may not be the best, but you gotta move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, yes. So that's the struggle of most creators at the start, I think.
Yeah, learning
how to process your creativity, learning how to handle the technical aspects and not run half marathons before that. So sort of scheduling yourselves.
Mm.
I mean, like, what's it now? Like, you guys organize your own schedules around your own businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
That also must be pretty something you guys, do you all take it very tightly or do you feel more flexible now?
I feel more flexible now, but we always try to hit the deadlines, you know, which is like one video every week.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But as long as we get that out there, then you can go out, you can take a break, it's fine.
That's so nice.
Yeah. See, architecture.
Psychoing me to be here. I mean, it comes with its territories, right? You guys are running your own businesses. It comes with the risks.
Yes.
Like you guys have overheads as well. Your crew, your equipment, your rent. But it comes with its freedoms. So, yeah, good and the bad. I think people think it's a lot easier than it looks. But looking at my own personal boss, I know it's like a hell of things. Like you have sleepless nights, not knowing when the next big income is coming in, how to feed your dog. Where's the dog? It's gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so the most challenging video, would you say? How about the most expensive?
Expensive?
Ooh, hot potato, I think.
Is that the most expensive?
But that's not really a YouTube video, though.
That was the stream one, right?
Yeah.
But that was more like a client job, right?
Oh,
kind of. But it was tricky because we had to quickly upgrade our skills to become live streamers.
Yes.
And I had no idea how to do it, so we got to figure it out.
Mm.
Then you have all your arrays of equipment and all the people are telling you different things. And you have to make a choice. Yeah. What do you buy? What do you roll with? It was tough.
I mean, that's the adaptability, right? I mean, how fast you can quickly adapt to the next thing, you know?
Yes.
Nobody saw this pandemic coming. Nobody saw live stream coming. Mm. We thought live stream was always there, you know, Twitch and stuff. But we never thought it would enter our lives so deeply, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody's buying, video capture cards and things like that. It went out of stock so fast because I was trying to stream as well, like on Twitch, playing games and stuff like that. So I know how rare those cards were at the beginning and like how everybody just went online. YouTube was flooded with tutorials on how to do live streams, you know, how your audio, how do you get it in sync. I got some lag time or something like that as well. But I mean, it shows the growth of your business as well on how you adapt to different circumstances. And I think this adaptability is something very important, wouldn't you say? Yeah. So most expensive video?
I'll still say it's that because it required new
the upgrading of things
and lots of mistakes.
Ah, okay.
Because I think like when I set it up,
yeah,
it didn't work. I'm like, oh, I'm missing something, so I go and buy it. I come back, oh, I'm missing something again. Back and forth, like eight times.
Yeah,
eight times, and the budget was triple by the end of everything.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So do you see? Is that still a continuing thing? Hot potato.
Not at the moment, but we are using like the live stream capabilities for other things. Right, like we're thinking of going to streaming as well, just for the fun of IRL streaming and stuff. Seems like a pretty cool thing to try.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Awesome.
I have a comment about the haters thing.
Yeah. Hey, go ahead.
So, I mean, there's this book by Hannah Arendt called Totalitarianism. So it was talking about how it was possible for a country to hate the Jews.
Yeah.
How's that like feasibly possible if the whole country is intelligent, filled with
different mindsets and everything? How could they still unite?
Correct. And similar for hating as well. And there was a very fundamental concept that was brought about. It was that of unfairness. So for the Jews back then, when when the command was given by the authorities to remove the Jews of their privileges, like they were sacked from their jobs, etc., they still were fine for a while because they had reserves and savings. Mm-hmm. And then people could see that and they feel, hey, that's not fair. I mean, they were removed of their privileges and yet they still live quite lavishly, for example, because they did have high positions.
Yep.
And the unfairness did fuel more things. So I did feel for a long time that if you got famous too fast without showing that you put in too much hard work, then people may say, hey, that's not fair. Like, I could have done that. How can you can get it all? Yep. But if you toil and suffer, then you have something to show. You can do that, you too, and you can get where I am in a way. So as we were toiling through and it was getting harder and harder, I was like, well, that's good. We're protecting ourselves from it.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah,
it was, it was really hard. Yeah, in every sense of the way, and the sacrifices started to mount more and more, sacrificing career paths, relationships, etc. Do I think it's difficult? I mean, everything is difficult in different fields. But I feel like we might have gotten less hate because we put in the hard work on it. So some people may say
the struggles were there.
Yeah, correct.
So it's sort of like it was obvious that you earned your way there.
In a way. Rather than
you know, having an unseen, having all these struggles unseen by the public.
Correct.
Yeah. So like not a one hit wonder kind of thing. Mm. Yeah, I don't really get what you mean by this overnight sensations getting all this hate. Because in society, I think everybody feels like you need to earn your way there. You need the blood, sweat and tears. And luck shouldn't be a factor, you know?
Even though it is.
It is definitely. Like, you can struggle on YouTube for years, do all the right things. But if it doesn't hit, it doesn't hit.
Correct.
You know? There is no one formula for it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. But I hope it hasn't affected you guys too much. As creatives, you know, you keep your minds fluid. Sometimes, not as like, you know, black and white as we used to. I think everybody struggles with that some way or another. Just that you guys are a bit more in the public eye. Mm. Did you ever foresee yourselves being in the public eye? You always wanted to do acting and production, right?
Yeah, I did.
So you kind of knew this was kind of coming.
I knew that I didn't particularly want to be
famous.
Yeah, I don't know, but I know that if you are not famous, like not known, that would have mean that you didn't really succeed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? In that sense. So even though I don't really like the idea of, you know, people recognizing you outside and then like taking picture like of you sneakily and stuff, it's some form of validation.
It comes with the
So same thing with the hate comments, right? If you don't get hate comments,
it means people aren't paying attention.
They always say that if you get hate comments, it means that you're getting somewhere.
Ah, okay.
Right? If you don't get hate comments, it just means that you're still stuck in this small little bubble and you haven't expanded beyond that bubble.
People have a choice to watch you or not to watch you. So their attention is the currency. Mm. If they choose to put attention on you, actually it's a good thing, even if it's hate. Yeah. Because the worst thing a hater can do to you is actually neglect you.
Okay.
Yeah. So neglect is the...
Like if you're not even worth watching, you won't have haters.
Correct.
That's true.
That's what I'm saying. Mm. Like if you have hate comments, it means you're on the right path.
Yeah, it means that when you put out a video, not only are your fans watching, but the video is being shared or being seen by people who didn't intend to watch a video and then therefore didn't like it.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's good. That's a good outlook on things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so see hate comments. Yeah.
All right.
I think more myself, peace. I need to be less spiteful. My replies need to be a bit more nicer. Mm. I mean, any advice for people wanting to look into this career? I mean, now it's a bit more, I wouldn't say saturated, but it's a bit more, not common. What's the word I'm looking for? It was less rare, I would say, in the next generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think your advice to them would be if anyone wanted to do something like that?
A wise man once told me, get good.
Your replies are
always good.
So
get good. Get good. Oh man, I never thought that would be a thing. I thought being bad.
But I guess what he means by that is that, I mean, think really, really hard. Watch what everyone's doing. I mean, really put yourself out there and learn from everything. Mm. It's a very scary concept and the imagination is infinite.
Yep.
But if you really put in your heart into it, that's the first step. So you're getting smart. And the second step is just to do it. Yeah.
Just
do it. Yeah.
There's one thing that always holds people back, and that is, like you said, fear. It's scary, right? So, like what Julian said, just do it. If you can't do it without, like, if you can't do it brave, just do it scared, you know? While you're still scared, just do it.
I have a personal example of this as well. So when I created my own YouTube channel, yes, I have a YouTube channel, guys. Yeah, you check it out. Yeah.
Plug.
So when I first created it, I was like, okay, I want to make it good.
Yeah.
But I can't because I got no time. Oh, I had to make many YouTube videos and I do other things as well, balancing everything. So I decided I was never going to do it actually. And then I should just try and make it into an experimental ground. Mm. So I experimented and we did well for the first two videos, better than I thought. And then the third video came and then I felt, I hate it. I kind of hate it because it's not representative of what I think I can do. But like you mentioned, you just kind of have to move on to the next project. So with like courage, I just like, let's just put out another video and another video, because I have to keep moving.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's the same for anything in life, I guess. You never kind of get, it's not a progressive thing. Like progress isn't a steady line. Yeah. There's dips and falls and things like that, but you will never reach the next peak if you don't move, right? Mm. So yeah, I think very valuable insights. I mean, any messages for your young audiences out there? Stay in school. Don't do drugs.
Get good.
Get good. I have one which I felt very strongly for. It was a poem. It was called "The Prophet."
The Prophet
by Khalil Gibran, if I'm not wrong. So there's just one phrase in it that says, "Parents are like the bow, and kids are like the arrow." And when the bow pulls and the arrow gets releases, even though the bow wants to follow where the arrow goes, it can never go because we live in a different world.
Yes.
So likewise to all the viewers out there, you live in a different world from even us and from our parents.
That's true.
So think big.
That's true. You can follow some lessons, but like you said, it's another uncharted path.
Correct.
For them. It's a lot of external external... Why do you keep saying external forces?
Yeah, I don't think you're really spiritual. I'm like, Sean is very spiritual.
I mean, there's so much things going on in the world right now. So it's, yeah, I mean, there's not a word for it. Just influences from political or climate. Yeah. You know, you might not have the polar ice caps anymore. I don't know how that will affect them. I think it was really enlightening to listen to you guys, the biggest creators I know. So very privileged to have a chance to talk to you guys, and I mean see a different side from what you guys usually put on your channel. Mm. You know, these sort of deeper thoughts, very philosophical. This guy, the amount of books that he can recite. My gosh, I've never even completed a book. Like, that's me.
Yeah, you can really tell the difference between like he's more of like the technical, intellectual. I'm just like crazy, free spirit, yeah. Like
I mean, it's a yin and yang thing, I guess. But thank you so much for your time, guys. I think we can wrap this up. I'll leave all the links to the Mini Mochi channel here. Do support them. I think the next time I can talk to you guys is at a 500,000 view, 500,000 subscribers.
Oh, that seems so far away.
And remember your first 1,000? That was the most painful. But I foresee great things for you guys. And thanks again for your time. Wishing you guys all the best in
you
the future.
Too, Sean.
Yeah.
Bye. Hey guys, thanks for watching this episode of Talk Some More. If you've enjoyed this episode, do give it a thumbs up or a like depending on which platform you're on. If you want more content like this, do also consider subscribing and leaving some comments as to what you'd like to hear next. For now, thank you for your support and I'll see you in the next episode.